ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ समस्तजनकल्याणे निरतं करुणामयं नमामि चिन्मयं देवं सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वत् सद्गुरुं ब्रह्मविद्वत्। ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथितां पुराणम् मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणी भगवती अष्टादशाध्यायनी अम्ब त्वामनुसन्दधाति भगवद्गीते भवद्धेशिनी यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्र मरुतः स्तुवन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति यं सामगा ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति यं योगिनः यस्यान्तं न विदुत्सुरासु देवाय तस्मै नमः देवाय तस्मै। ॐ श्रीगणेशाय नमः ॐ श्रीसरस्वत्यै नमः ॐ श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः। हरि ओम्। Welcome back after a long break of 3 months. So, we have covered 52 shlokas of the 18th chapter. I'm sure all of you remember what was in all the shlokas. If not, I'll try to summarize some of the major points of the 52 shlokas that we have done, and how also the 18th chapter is connected to all the different chapters we will try to highlight in the next today and in the next few weeks. You will see that Bhagwan Sri Krishna has taken points from all the chapters and then added, of course, additional points in the 18th chapter. So that's why the 18th chapter is the longest, because it summarizes the entire Bhagavad Gita, all the 16 chapters. So it starts with Arjuna's question as to what is sannyas and what is tyaga. These are the two questions Arjuna asks. And Bhagavan says sannyasa is giving up selfish actions. Kamyanam, karmanam, nyasa, sannyasam. So giving up selfish actions and having an attitude of detachment to activities. So that these ideas are taken from the 5th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And tyaga, Bhagavan says, is giving up the fruit of the action. So sannyasa comes before doing the action, that I am not the doer, I am just an instrument of the Lord, or Bhagwan is working through me, the self, and all actions I am not doing. the body, mind, and intellect are doing, and I am just an instrument. So that is fifth chapter. And then Tyaga, giving up fruit, is covered very well by Bhagwan in second and third chapter, where while I'm doing the actions, I don't worry about the result. So Bhagwan says, work we all have to do. Nobody can avoid work. And that is also covered by Bhagwan in the fifth chapter. But he says, give up the doership and give up attachment to the work or to the results. So when I'm doing something, you shouldn't say, oh, it's only my work. Nobody else can do it. If somebody else can do it better, let him do it. And focusing on the result, that while I'm doing the action, I'm thinking, what am I going to get? How am I going to succeed? And if I get, what will happen? If I don't get, then my mind will be dissipated. So while doing the actions, do the action in the present. And that Bhagwan has covered in the second and third chapters. And then he says activities can be done at the body level, physical, speech level, where I'm telling somebody something, or even at the mental level, thinking negative about somebody. So, kaya, vak, mana. These are the three focus or locus of action, and that is covered in the 17th chapter. So, Bhagwan mentions that also, that activities have to be done without attachment, without doership, and my physical speech and mind should be controlled. See, we should not do actions just like that, unnecessarily doing action, talking unnecessarily. Or when we are meditating or whether we are doing work, my mind should be focused on the action. So control at the physical, mental, and speech level, that was covered in 17th chapter. And Bhagwan summarizes that. Then in the 18th chapter, Bhagwan Shri Krishna says that jnanam is of three kinds and sukham is of three kinds. Jnanam is knowledge. So how is knowledge can be sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic? So what is sattvic knowledge? Where he sees one everywhere. One alone, unbroken. In the whole universe, there is one God, one consciousness that is pervading everything. That is also covered in the 13th chapter by Bhagwan. So seeing oneness in everything. So since everything is created by God, since God alone is there, I see everything as me, as myself. So that is sattvic. And not that God in me and then God in her and then there is a break. No, it is unbroken. One consciousness appears divided even though it is undivided. And then sukham or joy also Bhagwan says, you can see here, is of the three kinds. Sukham is joy. And how can joy be sattvic? In the jnanam, sattvic jnanam is seeing oneness. Rajasic jnanam is seeing divisions, that I am different from her, from him, from her, and then I'm competing, like how I can overcome by putting somebody else down. So that is rajasic. I'm working, but I'm working with selfishness, with a desire to overcome others. And what is tamasic jnanam? Seeing the one as all. So what I believe alone is right. Nothing else is right. Whoever doesn't believe in my path should be killed, should be destroyed. And that's fanaticism. That's when we see fanatics, suicide bombers, where they see that my path alone is right. My thinking alone is right. My God alone is right. And anybody who doesn't believe should be killed. So that is tamasic jnanam. And sukham, joy, is also of three kinds. Sattvic joy is the joy that is obtained from giving up this attachment, giving up this. And in the beginning, this path of sattva seems difficult. Say I'm starting a spiritual path. and I start meditation or I start reading, in the beginning you say it seems very hard, you know, Bhagavad Gita, all this knowledge. But slowly that knowledge purifies your mind. So even in the beginning it may seem difficult, but at the end it is sukham, it is nectar. So Bhagavan says it may appear, even when you start studying, say for an exam or for a test, you have hard work for 2 months, 3 months, but then when the end result comes, that is sukham. So that is sattvic, where in the beginning it is hard, but in the end it is great. What is rajasic sukham? Rajasic sukham is joy of enjoyment, pleasure. Khao piyo, enjoy life. What is the use of working hard? And so these people, rajasic, they just believe in enjoyment. And in the beginning, it seems like a lot of fun. But then continuous enjoyment, it weakens your senses, you know, indulging in anything, overindulging. If you're overeating, over drinking, alcohol, any of these joys, it appears to be good in the beginning, but is poison at the end, because it leads to addictions, leads to dependence, leads to weakening of your body. So rajasic is good in the beginning, but weaker in the end, causes problems in the end. And what is tamasic sukha? Bad in the beginning and bad at the end. Why? Because they are selfish, they are lazy. They don't want to work. They want whatever benefit society can give me. And if I don't get it, then it's okay for me to use violence and kill others. So that is poison in the beginning and poison at the end. So that's why Bhagavan says, practice sattvic jnanam and sattvic sukham. So do exertions and the result will be good. Then also in the 18th chapter, Bhagavan Sri Krishna had talked about the four castes, the Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Brahmins are the intellectuals, the thinkers. Kshatriyas are the warriors, the leaders, the warriors. They are the Kshatriyas. Brahmins are the thinkers, the teachers. So not only Brahman does not only mean one who does rituals, but say like a university professor who teaches, or a teacher who gives knowledge is considered Brahman. And who is Kshatriya? Kshatriya is not only the kings and all, but the warriors, those who defend the country, those who fight. So they are Kshatriyas. Vaishyas are the traders, the business people, the farmers, you know, those who run the country's economy. And then Shudras are not a low caste, but they are the workers. Those who work, they could be office secretaries, janitors, farm workers, factory workers, those who work in assembly line, they may be even, some of them may be very highly trained and qualified, but those who work under instruction. So these four castes are not only in Hinduism or not, but they are in all communities of the world. Everywhere in the world, we find thinkers, we find people who are politicians, administrators, we find business people, and we find workers. And in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th fourth chapter, Bhagavan makes it very clear, Chatur Varna Maya Srishtam Guna Karma Vibhagashah. So he says the four castes are not based on birth. They're not that if your father was a Brahmin, you're automatically Brahmin or a Kshatriya. It is based on your guna and your karma. So what activities you do, what job you take, and what qualities you have. And so a person from a Shudra background can, like we find the president of India, she is from, you know, from the originally considered the Shudra class. So if you have the right ability, you can accomplish whatever you need. So it is not based on birth. It is based on ability. And that's what he tells Arjuna also. Bhagavan tells him in the 18th chapter. He says, your temperament is a Kshatriya. You were born a Kshatriya. Even he had mentioned in the second chapter also that your dharma is that. And you have been trained, and right now you have a war which is against evil, which is against people who are dishonest, who have ruined the country. And it's not a personal war against you and one family against another family or one cousin against another cousin. It is a war against ideology. You're fighting against wrong ideas and corruption. And if you don't, the Kauravas will continue to rule the country. Their children will rule. The grandchildren will rule. So this country will go downhill, as we find. When the rulers are corrupt, when the rulers are dishonest, the country goes down. If the rulers are good, Bhagavan says also in the third chapter, yat yat acharati shreshta tat tat evetaro gunam. As the leaders do, the others follow. So that's what we see in the 18th chapter. Ideas from all the chapters have been covered and will cover more. And when we finished in May, the last talk, Bhagavan ended in shloka number 51 and 52, talking about meditation. The meditation chapter, the sixth chapter, was the entire chapter was devoted to meditation. But here in the 18th chapter, Bhagavan summarizes meditation in two shlokas, in 51 and 52, where he summarizes what we do in meditation: sit in silence and eat little, you know, live a life of eating less, not overeating, not oversleeping, not overindulging, but life of control. And sit with dhriti, sit with fortitude that I am on this meditation, I'm going to reach Bhagavan, who is the Lord, the self within. So that is the goal of meditation. So he says, sit with dhriti, with fortitude, control your mind, and your intellect should be pure, should be focused on the higher. At that moment, when I'm meditating, I'm not thinking of anything else but God's presence within. And also, a meditator should not have raga or dvesha, should not have likes or dislikes, because then if I like somebody a lot, then in my meditation, I'll think about it. Or if I dislike somebody, then definitely he will or she will come in my meditation. So raga dvesha, vyudasyacha, give up your raga dvesha when you sit for meditation. And at that time, even if any sound comes, any disturbance comes, your attention should be focused on the Lord within. And how? Vairagya. At that moment, when I sit for meditation, I am not a father, not a mother, not a child, not a sister, brother, but I am a seeker of truth. So that's what we had covered in May. So that's a brief summary of the shlokas in the 18th chapter, just the outline of the talks. So now we shall start with shloka number 53, chapter 18, shloka number 53. Those of you who have the book can repeat after me. If you don't, the books are available in the office with commentary, written commentary detailed by Swami Chinmayananda. So you can get it from the office, or you can sit and share with somebody. You can sit next to them so you can share the. So 18th chapter, shloka number 53. Aham, aham, karam, balam, darpam. Kamam krodham parigraham, vimuchya nirmama shantah, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. Together. Ahankaram balam darpam, kamam krodham parigraham, vimuchya nirmama shantah, brahma bhuyaya kalpate. If you don't have the book, you can also on your phone find chapter 18, shloka number 53 on your phone. It's off? Oh, it went off. I think this.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, so chapter 18, shloka number 53, you can find on your phone or in the book. So in the 51 and 52, Bhagwan Sri Krishna had told us what qualities we should develop. Be single-pointed, focused, don't have likes and dislikes, and have the goal of enlightenment, find God within, see oneness in all. That's what we had covered. Now in 53, Bhagwan is telling us what we should not have. As a spiritual seeker, as if my goal is to reach God and become one, then what are the qualities I should avoid in my life and how they will become problems? So ahankara means ego. Ego means this idea that I am separate from God, I am separate from others, and I am not dependent on the world. And this I am great, you know, this I, that is called ahankara. And ahankara, then bala. Bala is force, power. Darpam is arrogance. Kamam is desire. Krodham is anger. And parigraham means accumulating things constantly, on and on, accumulating constantly, whether I need it or not, just buying things, collecting things, not sharing with others, parigraham. And he says vimuchya. Muchya means free from. Vimuchya means visheshana muchya. Completely I should be free of all these qualities. And nirmamaha, without I and mine. And shanta. Shanta means peaceful. So if I do all these things, if I give up anger, greed, jealousy, all these, pride and all, then what will happen? Bhagwan says, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, you will become fit to reach that state of Brahman, which is the goal of spirituality, that I should become one with God. I should become one with God, not be separate, but I am an instrument in God's hands. I have been created by God, and God is in me, and God is everywhere. So to see that, to reach that goal, these negativities must be given up. So let us start with the first one, ego. You know, I am special, and I want what is good for me. I'm not concerned about society, not concerned about helping others. And I should take care of me, myself, and I. You know, that's all. So then this person becomes so egocentric that he puts all his effort in accomplishing that goal of my own success. So balam, then he gets power, he gets strength. I think somebody wants to come see this. Okay, sorry. And then valam, then he gets power. Valam, he gets power to work. But work for myself, selfish. Not work for society, work for myself. Valam. And then when he accomplishes something, then he becomes arrogant. You know, I am great. Nobody else is as great as me. I am the best, whether it's in the family or in the community or society or in the nation even. So when you have ego, when you have power, then you get arrogance, you get pride. You know, nobody is like me, mere jaisa koi, nobody can equal me, who is equal to me, all that. So that happens. Then darpam, then now he wants more and more. He has accomplished some, but he's not satisfied. So comes kamam, desire. Let me get this, let me get that. Idam mesya. In the Panchadashi, Vidyaranya Swami says, Idam mesyat, idam mesyat. May this be mine and may that also be mine. So everything should be mine. Whatever I see, I should possess. So that is kama. And how does krodha come, anger, when I don't get what I want? And somebody is an obstacle. Krodha, anger, I must destroy this person. I must somehow finish him off, whether it's economically or politically. So, and for that, I will use any means, foul or fair, right or wrong, do whatever it needs to accomplish my goal. So that is anger. And then parigraham is then accumulating more and more and more, more than I need. That's what Guru the Swami Chinmayananda says, that live in the minimum, create the maximum, and give the entire thing to the world outside. So keep what you need for your care, but if you have extra, share it with the world. But what we do, we live in the maximum, create the maximum, and give nothing to the world outside. Everything that I earn is mine. I have earned, I'm going to keep it. But think about it, even if we work as a doctor or an engineer or a business person or anywhere, when I work, so many other people are participating. You know, so many people, say if I'm a manager, there are so many factory workers who have worked. Or in nature, we get so much from nature. God gives us rain, gives us water, gives us air, gives us all the earth, you know, giving all the crops. So we are taking so much from society, so not giving back is parigraham. And then he says, once you have given up these qualities, vimuchya, completely given up, then what happens? Nirmama. Then you say, nothing is mine, everything is God's. And that attitude Bhagwan has covered in the second chapter, in the 12th chapter. So in the 18th chapter, he's summarizing the teachings of the previous chapter. So what is Nirmama? That whatever I own is given to me by Bhagwan. I am just using it. It is his gift to me. And that's what Gurudev says. What you have is God's gift to you. What you do with what you have is your gift to him. So I should serve and give back to society. Don't think that it is me, mine, everything. And I am the owner of everything. I heard a very beautiful story. It's a little long, but I'll cover it. It's nice. So there was this king who was very powerful, had a huge palace and was king of a large territory, kind of very proud about his accomplishment. Oh, I have so much money, so much power. So one evening, a sadhu comes to his palace and he tries to walk in to the gate, and the guards are, hey, kahan ja raha hai? Where are you going? He said, I'm going to stay in this dharamshala. He points the palace. He says, this is dharamshala. I want to stay here for a few nights. God says, what are you talking? Dharamshala, this is the king's palace. How do you dare you call it dharamshala? And what gives you the right to come and stay here? I think it's a dharamshala and I'm going to stay here. I'm not going anywhere. Go tell your king, your master. Who is him? The king? Tell him I'm here to stay in this dharamshala. So he was a sadhu, so they didn't want to be rude or kick him or beat him. So they thought, okay, he might curse or something. They didn't want to fight with him. So they went to the king and said, the guard said, you know, sir, your honor, there is a Mahatma outside who says this palace is a dharamshala and he wants to stay here for a few nights. So king said, didn't you tell him it's my palace? He said, we tried, sir, but he's not listening. So king said, okay, call him in. So king was in this huge hall sitting on the throne. And so this Mahatma comes. So he tells the king, oh, you have a nice dharamshala. I plan to stay here 2-3 days. He says, how do you call it dharamshala? This is my palace. So he asked the king, what is your definition of dharamshala? What do you call dharamshala? He said, dharamshala is a place where, you know, people come, stay for a few days and go. And I have made many such dharamshalas in this kingdom. And people come, stay for a while and then go away. So that is dharamshala, not this palace. So he says, oh, okay, that's what you're saying. So then he looks on the wall, there are pictures. So he says, who is that one? He says, oh, that's my great-grandfather, Raja Bahadur Singh. You know, he was the one who established this kingdom, built this palace. great king, Bhatla. He said, my great grandfather. He says, so what happened to him? So, well, he ruled for 30, 40 years in this kingdom, and you know, he left, he passed. So he saw, so you said, oh, he lived in this palace for some time and then left. He said, yeah, he left. Everybody has to die. He said, who's the next one? He said, oh, that's my grandfather. He said, how long did he live? He said, he lived for 60, 70 years, ruled this kingdom, lived in this palace and left. Now, who is that one? He said, that's my father. And he came, he ruled for 70, 80 years, he left. And now next, there is a blank. He said, oh, that's going to be my picture, you know, when I'm ruling now, but ultimately I will go, so my picture. So he says, didn't you say Dharamshala is a place where people come, live for a while and go? Exactly, that's what's happening in your palace too. People come, live for a while. So nothing belongs to you. Nothing is permanent. You can't say it is my palace, my kingdom, my wealth. And the king immediately realizes his mistake, you know, that I was getting so proud. He says, everything is God's. Everything belongs to Bhagwan, belongs to society. Nothing belongs to us. Whatever we are using, whether it's our house, our money, our car, our whatever is our his gift to us, so let us use it for the service of mankind. And the king immediately realizes his mistake, that how he had become proud and arrogant, and he falls down at the feet of this Mahatma and says, please forgive me. From now on, I'll rule this kingdom as an instrument of Bhagwan, not that I am the owner of the kingdom or of the palace. And he tells Mahatma, you can stay as long as you want. He tells the guards, give him the best room. And he says, you can come and go as you please because you have opened my eyes. So that is the idea. Nirmama, nothing belongs to me, everything. That's what Bhagwan says. Nirmama, shantaha. He becomes peaceful. How can I become peaceful when I have this attitude of contentment? That I worked hard, I did my best, and then ultimately the result is not in my hand. Result depends on many other factors, like a person racing in the Olympics. He tries his best. He has trained for many years. But then out of 8 people, only one will get gold medal, other 7 won't, and he may not. So the end result, you take it as God's prasad, that whatever I deserved, I got. Whether it's the Olympics, whether it's in business, whether even it's work, any kind of work, even cooking, whatever, everything has been given to me by God. My abilities are also given by God. So when I'm cooking, when I'm taking care of my family, I'm doing His work. And the result that comes, have prasad buddhi. This is God's prasad and I'm thankful. And then such a person becomes qualified, Brahma Bhuyaya Kalpate, becomes qualified to reach Brahmanhood. He has not yet reached, but one who practices all these qualities given in 51, 52, and 53, slowly his mind gets tuned with God, becomes one with God, and he gives up all this pride, arrogance, mind, everything, and God is alone working through me. And George Bernard Shaw says it very beautifully. He says, a person who works like this, giving up selfishness and ego, he becomes a force of nature. So that means nature is working through me. And Bhagwan Sri Krishna says it in the Bhagavad Gita, he becomes an instrument. That's why in the 11th chapter, he says, Mayev nihata purvameva nimitta matram bhava savya sacha. Bhagwan says, all has already been done by me. All you, Arjuna, is become my instrument. Bhishma, Drona, Karna, at the end of this war, 18 days, they will not be alive. The Kauravas will not be alive. 100. They are already been killed by me. All I am asking you is to become an instrument and do my work. If you don't do it, I'll find somebody else to do it. So to think that I alone can do it is not But the attitude that I am a servant of God, that is very important. And whatever abilities I have. So that's what he says in the 53rd shloka, that give up these negativities and then you will become one with God. You will work for God. So we'll do shloka number 54. Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma. Na shochati na kangshati. Sama sarveshu bhuteshu. Mad bhaktim labhate param. Together, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kangshati Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. So, Brahma Bhuta means one who has progressed on this path, on the spiritual path. That's why we, the spiritual realized masters, we call them Bhagwan. Bhagwan Raman Maharishi, Bhagwan Shankaracharya ji. So means they have become one with God. Not that they are God, I mean, you know, Krishna, not that Sri Krishna or Sri Rama, but these people have become one with God. They do not see any separation between God and me. And, you know, like Mirabai, she just said, I am married to Krishna, I have nobody else. Mere to Giridhar Gopal Dusara. So, no gap between him and God. So, Brahma Bhuta, so one who has become one with God in this way, and Prasannatma, and he has become very cheerful. We find that people who are progressed on the spiritual path, these Mahatmas and saints, when you sit with them, you feel that they are source of joy for the world. Why? Because they experience divine joy constantly. They experience God's presence constantly, like Ramakrishna Paramhans. Vivekananda asked him, have you seen God? He said, I see God more clearly than I see you. I see the mother. I talk to her every day. And he was always joyful, even though most of these saints don't have anything. They don't have money, they don't have wealth, they don't have power. But their words remain for thousands of years. You know, Buddha, he taught how many? 50, 100 people, but now there are billions of Buddhists. Jesus Christ, look at Shankaracharya ji, look at Tukaram, look at Gyaneshwar, Sant Gyaneshwar, his Bhagavad Gita, we still study. And in their life, they were very poor. They didn't have anything, but they had love for God. And that's why their words become immortal. So, Prasanna, he's always happy. Na shochati na kangshati. He neither desires nor does he grieve. And these ideas have been given in the 12th chapter. And Bhagwan is again quoting the 12th chapter. So we'll talk about what is shochati and kangshati. And then he says, sama sarveshu bhuteshu. He is the same towards all beings. He or she, whoever the saint is. Sama, he is the same. Sama is the word same in English. In Sanskrit is sama, one. Sarveshu bhuteshu, in all beings. Not only humans, but animals, birds, plants, fish, among all beings. He sees the oneness. And mad bhaktim labhate param. And he attains my Parabhakti, labhate means he gets, mad bhakti, my devotion. So when Bhagwan Sri Krishna says I or mine, he does not only mean I as the son of Devaki, you know, but I as the self, because he, Bhagwan, realizes and makes it very clear that I am that supreme consciousness functioning in this human body. So when he says I, he's talking about I as this supreme Paramatma. That he says that. And that's why when he says, I took, like, you know, in 18th chapter, he says, Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam raja. So give up all other dharmas and come to me. So one time somebody asked me, oh, you mean Krishna is saying that don't worship Ram or don't worship Shiva or don't worship Father in heaven or Buddha, but worship me alone? No, he does not mean me as Bhagwan Shri Krishna, but me as the total self, the total consciousness. So whether you're worshipping Buddha or Father in heaven or Allah or Sri Ram or Saraswati or Durga, you are worshipping that one supreme reality. And that's why people say, are there many gods in Hinduism? We say, no, there is only one God, Brahman, who plays various roles. She can play as Saraswati, as Lakshmi, as Durga, as Sri Ram, Vishnu, Shiva. So all these different manifestations are of that one. So that's what he says, I. When he says I, he means I, that supreme self. So Brahma Bhuta, how can he become Brahman? He says he does not become God. He's not that he is God, but he has prepared himself and he's convinced that what is my goal, what is my path, that I and God are one. God is not separate from me. I am in the path of bhakti, in the path of love. He says everything is God's creation. Everything is that. And so I am also. So we are all that. And that's what they say. The cause is in the effect. So if everything is created by God, everything is God. That's his idea. And including myself. In the path of knowledge, he says that Brahman alone is, and this world is an illusion, Maya. So in the path of knowledge, he sees the world as illusion. In the path of knowledge, he sees world as creation of Bhagwan. And he's convinced of this. So when he's totally convinced, then that will become his path. And then he says that he's prasanna. We already talked about how is he always happy? Because he feels God's presence in me. And for that, one has to reduce the ego, the idea that I am doing anything, I am the doer. So give up the doership and then give up the enjoyership. So I am not doing, Bhagwan is doing. And whatever results come, are his prasad. So with that attitude, then this person is always content. He has minimum ego and he has love for all beings. And sama, that's why in the fifth chapter, it is said, sama hi Brahma. Brahman is sama. Brahma is same. Go for God, everybody are his children. Or in Brahman's case, everything is one. That oneness. And so this wise person sees the same in all beings, sarveshu bhuteshu, not only in humans, but also in animals, birds, plants, fish. There's another beautiful story that I just thought of. So Saint Francis, you may have heard, was a very famous saint a few hundred years back, I think 14th, 15th century. And he was revered everywhere, respected. And he had the ability that he could talk to animals. He could talk to animals and understand what they are saying. So it so happened that one day he used to go from village to village, you know, teaching people, preaching the knowledge, you know, wherever. And people would give him a place to stay. If he had no place to stay, he would sleep under the tree. And then go on. If somebody gave him food, he ate. If not, he didn't eat. So he comes to this one village and he sees that people are all shouting, screaming, and they are collecting swords and they are collecting sticks. And all it was evening time. They're all getting charged up. Oh, we have to go. We have to. So he says, what's all this agitation, disturbance? What's wrong? What's the problem? He said, Saint, you don't know, we are going to kill this wolf who lives in the forest. He said, why do you want to kill this wolf? You know, all these sticks and swords and all that just for one wolf? Yeah, he's very cunning. We have tried and we can't get him. So we are going to take a big group and surround the forest from all sides and then move in and just kill him. Why do you want to kill him? He said, well, you know, every night he comes and we have our cattle outside, our sheep or our, you know, some or chickens or some, you know, cattle, and he comes and he kills them and he eats. So every night one of our animals is killed because of this wicked wolf, and so we want to kill him. Okay, why don't you do this? Give me a chance. Let me talk to the wolf. He said, talk to the wolf? I never heard of anybody talking to animals. Okay, you can do that. So that evening, he waits near between the forest and the village, near the edge of the forest. And he calls out, Mr. Wolf, please come out. And the villagers are standing back and watching, you know. They see the wolf come out, and the wolf comes and sits in front of Saint Francis. So he asks the wolf, why do you do that? Why do you kill all the cattle? And the wolf makes a growling sound. So he tells them, you know what the wolf is saying? That I'm hungry. And so when I'm hungry, I need something to eat. And my nature is I have to eat, you know, these meat or these cattle. Otherwise, I'll starve. So he tells the village people, he says, the wolf is eating because he is hungry. So instead of killing him, every day put a little bit of meat near the edge of the forest. And he will come and eat, he will be happy, and your cattle will be safe. I've talked to him. I said, if you get this, will you be happy? He said, yes, I'll be happy. So that's what they started doing. Every day they would keep a little bit of meat. Wolf would come and eat, be happy. Their cattle would be safe. They didn't have to put, you know, guard or security or, you know, fence around. So the point is that these great Mahatmas see God in everybody, not only in humans, but also in animals, birds, plants. So they have spontaneous compassion for all. So that's why he says, Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. He attains my supreme devotion. So through knowledge, he attains devotion. So what do they mean by that? What is meant is that Brahman, the total consciousness, is the non-doer, the self, which is the substratum, the spirit. You know, they say matter and spirit. So spirit doesn't do anything, but the matter, this body, mind, and intellect, with the presence of God within us, we are able to function. So God himself does not do anything, Brahman, but creates the world, and then the world functions, and he enters. So God has entered into all of us. That's why we are able to talk, listen, sit, walk, talk. So that the creator is called Ishvara. So Brahman is the substratum, is the consciousness, the total. And that Brahman takes on the role of Ishvara. Ishvara is Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, the creator, sustainer, and destroyer. And all three are required, because if there is no death, no destruction, the world will get overcrowded. If nobody ever dies, if nobody had died in last hundreds of years, there would be no place. If the dinosaurs had not been destroyed, again, humans would not. So the creation is required, sustenance and destruction. So Brahma, Vishnu, and Mahesh, all three are divine powers, and all three are equal. It's not that one is superior, one is inferior. They say whatever form of God you love, worship that form, but respect all other forms. So one who becomes one with that reality, with that God, that oneness, that God and I are not separate, he is called Jnani. And In the seventh chapter, Bhagwan talks about Jnani, and I'll just summarize that. Chaturvidha bhajante mam jana sukriti norjana artho artharthi jignyasu jnani cha paratarshava. O Arjuna, there are four kinds of people who come to me, Bhagwan says. All of the people who go to God, there are four kinds. One is arthi. Arthi means one who is suffering and wants relief from suffering. Oh, I have this health issue, or my child has, or my father has, or my mother. So relieve me from this suffering. So any physical, mental stress, intellectual stress, physical stress, pain, all that. So arthi, that is, I am suffering, artha, and I want freedom from suffering. That's number one. Artharthi. Artharthi means one. Artha means wealth. Artharthi means one who is seeking wealth. So wealth means any, you know, material things. I need a car, I need a house, I need a business. My business should do well. I should have more money, more this, more that. So that is artharthi. And same thing, it can be political power. It can be, I want to become president, or I want to become prime minister, or I want. So that is the second group where they are seeking wealth. So first is relief from suffering. Second is seeking wealth and power, artharthi. Then third kind is jignyasu. Jignyasu means, ye Bhagavad Gita mein likha kya hai? What is in Bhagavad Gita? You know that. So he wants to study, but just with the desire that I should get knowledge. And he could be like a teacher, you know, he could become a university professor, study Sanskrit, and then teach Sanskrit, teach Upanishads, teach Bhagavad Gita. So that is the third kind, arti, artharti, and jignyasu, who wants knowledge. But he says they are all very noble. They're all very good, but Jnani is the most dear to me. Why? Because he comes to me wanting me. He goes to God, he says, I want you. I don't want anything else. I don't want freedom from suffering. Even if suffering is written in my fate, if I'm destined to suffer, it's okay. I will, if it's in my karmas, no problem. I don't even need extra wealth. I don't, whatever, you know, Kabir Das Ji says, okay, what I should have is enough for me and enough. He says, Sai itna dijiye jame kutum samaye, main bhi bhuka na rahu, sadhu na bhuka jaye. He says, oh God, give me enough so that I can take care of my family. I should not be hungry. And if tomorrow somebody comes to my house, a sadhu or a wise person, I should have enough to take care of him. So he says, that much only I want. Sai itna dijiye. Not, I don't want extra. So Jnani approaches God. And that's why Bhagwan says, Jnani to atma eva me matam. In my opinion, Jnani is like me. He is one with me. Bhagwan himself says that one who comes to me for me alone, and then he gets me. But another person, if he wants wealth, I'll give him wealth. Another person wants power, I'll give him power. Another person wants freedom from sorrow, I'll give. Not that one should not go to ask God for, suppose you have some suffering or some difficulty. Yeah, it's okay to ask God, to pray to God. But one should not pray to God only when you need things. Go to God even when you don't need. Because that's what we do. As long as things are going well, I'm so busy. I don't have time to go to the temple. I don't have time to study Bhagavad Gita. I don't have time to meditate. But then suddenly when suffering comes, then immediately I run to the temple, or immediately I run to some Atma for relief. So they say, one who wants me for my sake, that is my self alone. And mad bhaktim labhate param, he attains my supreme devotion. And bhakti, the chapter of bhakti we had covered in the 12th chapter in detail. But here Bhagwan says, what is bhakti? So here he has described this, na shochati, na kangshati, all these ideas from 12th chapter. So we'll see that in the 18th chapter, there are points from every chapter in the Bhagavad Gita Bhagwan has done. So that's what he says. And he attains my supreme devotion. And that's what we see, that all these Mahatmas, even hundreds of years after they are gone, they are still worshipped and revered. Their teachings, we still follow. Swami Chinmayananda, Puja Gurudev, he attained enlightenment at the feet of his guru, Tapovan Maharaj. And then he came down to the plains. He could have just stayed in the Himalayas and meditated, but he told his guru that I need to go down into the plains and share this knowledge, because in around 1949-50, when Puja Gurudev came down from the Himalayas, people didn't have that much knowledge of Bhagavad Gita as we have right now. You can go on the internet and read any chapter, read commentaries by all great gurus. In those days, they didn't have all that. They had very few books. Most of it was in Sanskrit. You know, Swami Vivekananda was the only one pretty much who had, you know, shared this knowledge, and that was in 1890. So Puja Gurudev continued that work and spread this knowledge throughout the world. And that's why we have 300 Chinmaya mission centers throughout the world, where people are studying in adult classes, children classes. We have, you know, Bal Vihar going on, and, you know, as you have seen. So these Mahatmas, and Puja Gurudev took Mahasamadhi in 1893, but his work is still going on. His students and then the students have continued this work. And Swami Tejomayananda ji did that, and then Swami Swarupananda ji, and then all the other acharyas, Swami Ishwarananda ji and all. So the work of these Mahatmas never ends, because they have God with them. He says, if God is with me, then isn't a Janaki Nath Sahai Kare, to kaun bigad kare narteru. There is a beautiful bhajan. He says, when God is with you, nobody can hurt you. Even the stars may be against you. Rahu, Ketu, Shani, nobody can hurt you. When if you have God with you, so that's what they say. Bhagwan says, Mad Bhaktim Labate Param. He attains my highest abode, because he's convinced of his path. He's convinced of his goal, that this is my goal in life. This alone is what I need to reach. This alone is what I need to get. So that's what we can learn from these two shlokas, that I have to first make my goal clear, that my goal in this life is to reach as close to God as possible, attain enlightenment, or if not, at least get closer to God. Because in the sixth chapter, Bhagwan tells Arjuna, when he asks, he says, even if you don't reach me, but wherever you have reached, I'll put you in a family where you can continue your journey. Best is in this life itself, I want to become one with God. Actually, we are one with God. God is not separate from us, you know, whether it's Shiva or Krishna, they are all here. We are not separate, but we think we are separate. So think I am one with God. Achieve that goal. And even if you don't, not to be discouraged. Whenever I start, is enough. Jab jaage tab savera. Whenever you have woken up, that is morning. So start your journey towards God. And then have complete faith. And then give up these negatives, which we talked about. Ahankara, bala, darpam, you know, arrogance, ego, pride, anger, selfishness, all these. And then such a person reaches me. And so we have seen the path of knowledge. Today we have seen the path of knowledge. What to first give up? And then what is the path of knowledge that we have seen? How that to become one with God. Next week on Sunday, we will see path of bhakti and path of karma, karma yoga. So next two shlokas will be that, and then we'll continue the study of the 18th chapter. So it is 12 o'clock. We have about 10 minutes. If anybody has any questions, comments, anything you agree, disagree, please feel free. I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. So we have time.
You know, I was thinking about, you know, the whole concept.
Yeah, can is the speaker not here, huh? Today, Amit, we don't have that speaker. Yeah. Oh, you can just speak loud.
Okay. I was thinking about the whole idea of meritocracy. You know, there's a lot of talk about that. And I don't know, maybe just your comments about how that works out. I mean, I know that most people, you know, say you're a doctor. Well, if someone comes in and says, well, I really need $50 an hour. Well, it's not likely they're going to get that, you know, unless, you know, they have some kind of skills that you feel makes that right. But so I don't know, just what are your ideas about that?
I think this world, that's why they have the forecasts, you know, the groups where, you know, different people do different work based on their talent, based on their knowledge. And if everybody got the same wage, that's what Lenin and Marx and all in communism, they said, oh, everybody should be get the same wage. You can't do that because then there'll be no incentive to work hard. See, somebody works hard, studies, spends 15, 20 years going through medical school, internship, residency, he's almost 30, 35 years before he starts earning. And then he has put so much time in studying, or somebody in a business, you know, starts with a scratch, with nothing. And then after so many years of effort, builds up a business. And then you say, okay, the business belongs to the state. Everybody will share, then close the door. Everybody will share. Then there is no incentive for a person. Why should I start my business and work hard if everybody will get the same? And that communism doesn't work. They tried that. Stalin, Lenin, Marx, they tried that. But ultimately what it did made a few people powerful and they became rich. So it's not that in communism people are not rich, but there are a few people who are rich and the majority just suffer. So meritocracy, it should not be based only on birth, but it should be based on effort and success. Yeah, if somebody is born rich and then he thinks he's entitled, that I would call meritocracy, I think. But if somebody works hard, I don't see why he should not have the result. A farmer who works hard to grow grain, another one who has land, he does nothing. And at the end of the harvest, the government comes and says, okay, the grain has to be given equally to all the farmers. They'll say, why did I work hard to produce grain if I have to share with this guy who was just sitting and fishing, you know? And
well, I completely agree, but isn't that up to God?
No, it's not up to God. It's all based on our karmas. See, whatever qualities I have, it's because of my karmas in my past life, whether good or bad, and because of my vasanas. And because, so everything is based on karma. God does not sit up there and say, okay, I'll give him $1 million and this person a beggar and I'll make him a genius. Another one has Down syndrome. He does not do anything. He says, I don't do anything. I just give you the results of your karmas. That's why human beings have the ability to choose. So it's not up to God. God is nothing. I'm not saying God is nothing, but God is just the giver of results. He does not do anything. Na kinchit karomi iti, Bhagwan says in the Bhagavad Gita also. And I don't do anything, but in my presence, this is happening. So to blame God for my bad or good is wrong. It's everything is based on my karmas.
But if I, you know, someone comes to your house and says, well, I want to stay here a few days,
No, why would you let him stay? He might be a thief or might be.
I mean, this guy was supposed to be a sadhu that came to the king's palace.
No, he wanted to teach him a lesson. It's not that, you know, he came with a different purpose. A sadhu coming with the idea to teach is different from a guy coming with a gun and saying, I want to stay in your house. And yeah, if you are that generous and if somebody comes, yeah, you're welcome to let him stay. That's your choice. The king didn't want him to stay, but then he opened his eyes. He taught him. So.
Not a communist, that's for sure.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Any comments? Lata, yeah, go ahead, please. Yeah, that one afterwards. Lata, you go ahead. Then you. Yeah.
Yeah. In the shloka, the 54, it says doership and enjoyership. So you have to be watchful of both. Would you kindly explain that?
Yeah, doership is the idea that I am doing it. Enjoyership is the result. So if I am doing it, then I get the result. Then I enjoy, or I suffer if I didn't do well. But if God is working, then the result also goes to him. And that is why. But I think Gurudev also mentions in his commentary that there are some people who have given up the world and become sadhus or become priests. But their desire to enjoy remains. Unfortunately, they have given up selfish work. They are working for church or for temple or for... But their enjoyership remains. And that's why we find, unfortunately, in some priests or some sadhus, when they molest children or have affairs or things like that. Because the doership is gone, but the enjoyership is not gone. So that's what Gurudev says, that give up the doership, that I am the doer, and also that I am enjoying. God is doing it. So that.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a question, please?
Yeah. So does the Bhagavad Gita differentiate between give? So does it depend on who you're giving to? Could it be family? Could it be society? Could it be to God? Could it be to, you know, your kids? Could it be to, you know, just the person on the street?
Yes.
Does the Bhagavad Gita differentiate between who you're giving to?
Yes.
So I know it's good to give, but does it matter on who you give to?
Yes, absolutely. So Bhagwan says there are three kinds of givers: sattvic, rajasic, and tamasic. Sattvic giver is the one who gives to the right person at the right time what they need and the right amount, quantity. Without any ego that I am the doer, I am the giver, God is giving through me. So he has no ego, number one. Number two, he does not expect even thanks, does not expect. But he gives it to the right person. Like if there is an alcoholic and you give him $20, that is a tamasic gift. All he's going to do is go drink, you know, or drugs or whatever. So giving to the right person at the right time when they need it with the right attitude that I am not giving, God is giving, that is sattvic. Rajasic giving is that I give something to somebody, but what am I going to get in return? So like a businessman wants a contract from the government. So what he does, he goes to the politician on the side and, you know, says, okay, you give me this $10 million contract and $500,000 is yours. And that is also giving, right? He has given $500,000, but he's getting $10 million in return, and that is illegal. So that is rajasic giving. And tamasic giving is where I just only don't want to give back to society. So that is tamasic, where what he is doing is he's just giving sorrow to society, where his whole purpose is, what can I get out of it? And he, at least a rajasic person, is building a factory, producing, even though he's doing it selfishly. Tamasic is only for me, myself, and I, and not producing, but taking from society. So again, givers can be of three kinds. Also, tamasic giving is where you insult somebody and give. Like you give to a beggar in India and then you say, "Are chala ja," and you give him 2-3 bad galis and then you give him 5 rupees. Now that is tamasic giving, because you have insulted the person, made him feel that he is inferior. So giving can be of three types based on your attitude and based on to whom you are giving and how. So it can be sattvic, can be rajasic. Sattvic is right person, rajasic is selfish, and tamasic is insulting to make the other person feel bad, and then you give. So yes, Bhagavad Gita does talk about three kinds of giving. That's a good question. Thank you. I think we'll end here. We'll all go into the hall where we'll do aarti and have announcements. And we'll close here. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukkha Bhag Bhavet. Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Hari Om. Thank you very much. Hari Om.